Has Iran taken over the US State Department? Over the last few months, a series of incredibly shocking revelations have shown Iran has deeply embedded itself in the US State Department, and they've gotten so much from that State Department as well. Several senior members of their staff have ties to Iranian intelligence. Their spies have been found all over it. We're going to look at what is going on with Iran's spies on today's Trumpet World. I'm joined today by the Trumpet's Middle East correspondent, Mihailo Zekic. Now, Mihailo, we've had quite a lot of big news recently about this infiltration from Iran into the State Department. Can you summarize it for us?
Yes. Well, the big story that most of this is revolving around centers around a figure named Robert Malley. He was one of the negotiators for the 2015 JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal under Barack Obama. And in 2021, Biden appointed him as the special envoy for Iran, a new unique role that he created just for him. With that experience, as I mentioned, and with the Obama administration, you could figure what Biden was hoping Malley would be able to accomplish. And sure enough, in 2023, months before October 7th happened and any overtures of the West were killed, there were rumors that there was a new nuclear agreement being in the works between Biden's State Department, including Mr. Malley, and Iran. Nothing was ever officially released to the public. There was no text we could pore over. But from what we can understand, again, until October 7th, there was an unofficial understanding between the Biden government to unfreeze certain sanctions and send money over to Iran in exchange for them halting their nuclear program. That was been confirmed by both Iranian and Israeli figures.
So, but while all of this was going on and Malley was doing all of his negotiations with Iran, we got some pretty shocking revelations about this guy.
Yes. Well, on April 22nd, Malley got his...
Was this 2023?
2023, yes. He got his security clearance suspended by the FBI and then eventually was put on leave by the State Department. Nobody was saying why. There was a lot of questions surrounding it. Then in the autumn of that year, Semaphore and Iran International jointly published the fruits of an investigation they'd done, where it turns out Malley has basically been surrounding himself with Iranian spies, or at least Iranian assets within the United States. In 2014, according to what the investigation uncovered, the Iranian foreign minister created what they call the Iran Experts Initiative, which was this loose grouping of policymakers, media voices, mainly among the Iranian diaspora within the United States, to connect with the foreign ministry to basically coordinate their activities and get a lot of noise in public discourse supporting Iran and their policies. This was, of course, right before the JCPOA was going to be signed. And a lot of these figures were people advocating for something like that to the American public. As far as Malley is concerned, there's three people of note. There's Ali Vaez, who is actually Malley's protege in the International Crisis Group, a think tank that Malley headed between 2018 and 2021. And then there's Dina Esfandiari, who's a senior advisor at the same think tank. And then we finally have Ariane Tabatabai, who's probably the most controversial among them. She's actually a U.S. government employee. She was actually appointed as part of Malley's team in 2021. She later left, but then she got a job at the Department of Defense as a chief of staff. And there was other things that have since been reported in media about his security clearance, like him using a private email server that was compromised and leaked confidential information out there. Where have we heard that before with the State Department?
So what was he employing these people to do?
Well, again, some of them were colleagues of his in the think tank. I mentioned the International Crisis Group. In Tabatabai's case, she was actually part of his staff in his role as negotiating with Iran and whatnot. So she was basically a double agent, except that for all intents and purposes, I think it's safe to say most people in his company knew that she was, like, there was no secret.
So this Iranian influence group, it's more than influencing public opinion on Iran. It's actually crafting State Department policy.
there are other activities they're involved in, including in one other figure that wasn't necessarily connected with Mali. He was actually ghostwriting pieces for the Iranian Foreign Ministry for major media outlets to try and help them out with their public relations image. In Tabat Tabai's case, she was actually going meeting with officials in the Middle East, including from places like Saudi Arabia and Israel, while consulting with the Iranian Foreign Ministry ahead of time on how to conduct those meetings, or at least those were in the works.
So, to paraphrase Oscar Wilde, to a point, one Iranian agent looks like carelessness or misfortune, sorry. To a point two looks like carelessness. To a point three, that starts to stretch the ideas that this is just someone who's very bad at vetting people for high positions and starts to feel very much more like somebody opening the door to let in Iranian infiltrators. And given that the FBI suspended his security clearance, clearly it's not just a couple of armchair commentators that have that suspicion.
Exactly. And Mali had a bit of this reputation beforehand as well, not necessarily with employing spies, but one of the reasons he was so controversial when he first got put into high positions was he had working relationships with groups like Hamas and Hezbollah.
So Mali has opened the door of the State Department to Iranian agents. He's allowed them in. They've then been able to spread their influence, maybe compromise more people. Who knows? I think the big question now is then, well, is this a major intelligence coup from Iran? Is this where they came in and they somehow have some compromising propaganda, some compromat on Mali or something like that? Or is there more at work? And I think to answer that question, that's where we have to go back and look more at what was the State Department doing, and more generally, what was the foreign po what foreign policy with Iran was going on under Barack Obama.
Exactly. It might seem like a long time ago now, but the nuclear deal back then was really, really controversial because it unfroze so much money to Iran without really expecting them to comply with certain things. It had the sunset clause that allowed them to start enriching uranium again just a few years down the road. And Iran started breaking some of the conditions it said it would abide to almost immediately, and there were no snapback sanctions. This was Barack Obama considered this his foreign policy magnum opus, and I think there's still plenty of people among his circle that are bitter that Trump got rid of it, among everything else that's happened. The whole deal was basically meant to empower Iran. Some people look at it as, well, peace through understanding and trying to reach them on their terms. If that were the case, they could have had a much stricter deal without compromising, say, on some of these other things I mentioned.
This deal led to, was it 100 million in cash
At least.
being sent to Iran on pallets? Like, would October, I think it's a genuine question, would October 7th have happened without the Iran nuclear deal? This is something that gave Iran the ability to fund and support terrorist groups all across the Middle East. Missile technology in particular was something that was sanctioned before the Iran nuclear deal. Those sanctions were listed. Israel right now is going into, or at least with air incursions, into Lebanon, trying to deal with Iranian missiles in the form of this Hezbollah missile stockpile. This affects everything. Now, we knew the Iran nuclear deal was bad at the time. We were pointing it out. Lots of people were pointing it out, like giving hundreds of millions, billions really, of dollars, because there were all kinds of things, funds unfrozen, and then all kind of trade opportunities opened up, giving billions to Iran, this number one state sponsor of terrorism, very clearly a bad idea. We have received more information since then, and even just in the last few weeks, on how bad this was.
Indeed. A prominent example, although I think it should be more prominent, is the former intelligence official John Schindler. He runs a blog of just compiling different stories that come up in the intelligence community, but he also has experience with intelligence work himself. And he was a bit vague on the details, and he felt compelled in a recent post to mention one incident he had in an unnamed Central European country where a member of an allied intelligence service that he specified wasn't Israel, gave him information that show that Iran was much further ahead in its nuclear program than the State Department was saying publicly. And he tried to send that information on to the Central Intelligence Agency, and they actually turned it down. And when he talked with his colleague that gave him the information, he said that he tried to give it directly to them too, but it didn't work. And he, out of desperation, he went to Schindler because he felt that he was a sympathetic voice. And the reason they turned it down was because this was a time when the nuclear deal was being crafted, and they didn't want necessarily bad press coming out, causing problems. I mean, even without that, America has one of the most sophisticated intelligence systems in the world. They probably know a lot more about the nuclear deal than we've ever heard, the public has heard, or that many of the smaller intelligence agencies have heard. And I think Ben Rhodes himself admitted once in another speech, if memory serves me right, that they knew when Hassan Rouhani, the so-called moderate president, came into Iran that he wasn't actually moderate, that he wasn't changing any of the hardline policies of the government that preceded him. But they were still framing it as this Iranian perestroika that was going to bring a thaw in relationships and somebody that they could work a nuclear deal with. But this. There's been a few other revelations within the last few years as well. There's been news that some of Obama's inner circle have even kept up the outreaches to Iran while the Trump administration was in power. I mentioned Mali.
That is definitely worth getting into. Just before we move on, I thought, you made a great point about America's intelligence agencies, where they actively close their ears. I think that example was one. Another example that came out only after the government was out of office, I think, or towards the only after the nuclear deal was done, was the Drug Enforcement Agency's Project Cassandra, where they uncovered this massive drug arrangement between Venezuela and Hezbollah. It ended up with $200 million a month being deposited in a Lebanese bank. It was called the largest material support scheme for terror operations ever. So this is something, again, this is the money that Hezbollah used to buy the rockets that are currently in attics in Beirut that Israel is trying to take out right now. And it was closed down by kind of orders from on top. Not only did these intelligence agencies actively close their ears, but then the Obama administration also weaponized these intelligence agencies to go after opponents of the nuclear deal. So if you look at the way that America's intelligence agencies and even criminal justice system went after General Michael Flynn, that got started while General Michael Flynn was speaking out against the Iran nuclear deal. And instead of the intelligence agencies providing intelligence that showed this nuclear deal might not be a good idea, they were used to try and dig up dirt on Flynn and silence somebody who was criticizing the deal. So lots of shady things going on while Barack Obama was president. But he's out of office in 2016. Donald Trump comes into power. Ultimately, he ends the Iran nuclear deal. There's still a lot of shady things going on with those Obama people, though, during that time.
Yes. Going back to Mali, some of those figures that he was surrounding himself with, an international crisis group, he started his relationships with them, his relationship with the think tank after he obviously left office in 2021 was in March. Mohammad Javad Zarif, who was the Iranian foreign minister at the time, gave an interview with Iranian media that was unpublished, but Iran International, that same group I mentioned before, they obtained a recording of it. And in that interview, Zarif was talking about some of the friction he had in his role as foreign minister with the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, Iran's autonomous military that is directly under the supreme leader's thumb, does things with or without the civilian government's consent. And Zarif, for his part, was complaining that they weren't giving him much information. But guess who was giving him information? This is a quote from the interview Iran International released. "It was former U.S. Foreign Secretary John Kerry who told me Israel had launched more than 200 attacks on Iranian forces in Syria." End quote. John Kerry was Barack Obama's Secretary of State at the time. And I mean, just the fact that he would even be talking about this with the foreign minister of Iran is explosive enough. This information in particular may not have necessarily been private. Israel had bragged to amount such publicly before. But what got my attention at the very least was, notice the former. This was most likely after Kerry had left office, when Trump was in the White House, when he became a private citizen, but in his role as a former Secretary of State, still had access to classified information. And according to what we can tell from what the Israeli government has said about those numbers, most likely this happened in 2018. So over a year at least, when Kerry and Obama had stopped being a part of the government. What is a former Secretary of State talking with the current, at the time, Iranian foreign minister about American policy and about Israeli policy? At the very least, that raises a lot of red flags. Kerry, for his part, denied the report, but this was actually brought up in a press conference with then White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, and this is what she had to say.
So the first one is, in tapes obtained by the New York Times, Iran's foreign minister says that former Secretary of State John Kerry informed him that Israel attacked Iranian interests at least 200 times. You know, as the Secretary has shifted roles, he still continues to represent the United States on a world stage. Does the president have any comment or reaction to Kerry telling the Iranians about covert military action on the part of Israel?
We're not going to comment on leaked tapes.
I mean, the fact that she wouldn't even comment about it, when calling it, we don't talk about leaks. It's not a leak from the U.S. government. It's a leak from an Iranian news organization. And yet the fact that they wouldn't even talk about it suggests at the very least there is a kernel of truth in there and probably a lot more.
And if that's true, I mean, it would be a violation of the Logan Act, which has never been enforced, may not be constitutional, but the radical left weaponized the Logan Act against General Flynn. That's one of the things they threatened to prosecute him with. They accuse other people of breaking that all the time, so I don't think it's unfair to bring it up in this context. And that is exactly what the Logan Act is designed to prevent. Not to prevent an incoming administration from getting its foreign policy ready, but to prevent a private citizen behind the scenes of the current government running an alternative foreign policy. And during this time, Iran was, okay, yes, in general, an American enemy, but also very specifically was talking about doing things like assassinating the sitting president.
Indeed, we have another video we could play right now. This was released on Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's website.
And so these are the guys that Barack Obama's people are talking to right around the same time they're making videos like this.
Yes, indeed. And this video that was put up, this was in response to General Qasem Soleimani's assassination that Trump famously took out. The Iranians, that's still very much a sore spot for them, even with everything else that's happened with Trump and with other people. But the big thing I think is interesting is that these assassination, at least figures bragging about assassinating Trump, have not stopped. And for Iran's part, in very recent history, there's at least one time when they actually sent somebody over to try and assassinate him. Again, something that hasn't received as much coverage nearly as it should have, mainly because of what happened the day after. But combining with that, you can see why. On July 12th of this year, the day before Thomas Crooks did his attempted assassination against Trump, there was a Pakistani national named Asif Merchant, who was apparently employed by the IRGC, offered $1 million by the IRGC to shoot Trump, to assassinate him. And apparently this was a plan going quite far back, to the point where he was already scouting out Trump rallies and noticing like how much security was involved, how many guards there were, and sending that information back to the IRGC. On July 12th, he was arrested by the FBI in an airport in New York, getting ready for that. The next day, of course, an actual assassination attempt happened. There's been a lot of questions about Trump's security detail and how the Secret Service was understaffed and how they failed purposely, most likely, in doing the job in securing the building that crooks operated from. The day before that, the FBI literally captured a foreign national employed by Iran to do the same thing. At the very least, why was not security immediately beefed up when news of that came out, or when they first got the tip-offs? Like, you would think that would be a huge red flag, especially if it's somebody the IRGC is taking seriously enough to offer that kind of money to. I mean, it's not just the State Department, I think, that we can lump in with getting infiltrated by different groups.
So we've gone over the way Barack Obama empowered Iran, the way his officials continued to work with Iran while out of office. Then Joe Biden comes to power, and some of the very same people that were negotiating with Iran under Obama are given very similar jobs. Off they vote to go empowering Iran, I think more quietly this time. There was a lot of public opinion. People like Benjamin Netanyahu really raised a hullabaloo about that previous nuclear deal. So they empower Iran, but they don't sign a massive treaty, and they try and keep it out of the headlines. They do this for 4 years. Now we're coming up to an election. And then, well, this came up on the Week in Review last week, where Iran is showing pretty strongly who it wants to win that election.
Indeed. There was, we talked about it again in the Week in Review, but we can mention it here. The FBI last week announced that they found that Iranian hackers had taken what they call non-public information and tried to give it over to the Biden team, as in the Joe Biden election campaign, not the Kamala Harris campaign. So this automatically dates when this happened to, at least not within the last few months. The campaign for themselves has said that none of that material was used and they didn't respond. We don't know what kind of material it was. The big question is, why are we finding out about this now? Why didn't the Biden campaign at the very least notify some enforcement agencies, hey, like, there is a foreign actor that is an enemy of ours trying to disrupt our electoral system, so disinformation, etc. We need to show the American people that they can have integrity in our systems, and regardless of what we think of our opponent, we are transparent about this. And we want to show how fair the system is. That never happened. We're only finding out about this now. And Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, for his part, is pressing intelligence agencies to try and get to the bottom of this. Even the Trump campaign, I don't know what they know, obviously, but from the responses they've been getting, it looks like this is news to them as well. And if that's the case, why didn't they find out about this earlier when the actual stealing of information was happening, or where it was going, at least? Before we move on, though, I want to circle back, if I could steal one of Jen Psaki's famous catchphrases, to another person we mentioned, Arianne Tabatabai. Mally, at this point, her old boss has a security clearance suspended. He's on unpaid leave from the State Department. Tabatabai is still working for the government. That we know of, she's still an employee in the Department of Defense, in the Pentagon, and she still has access to classified information, even with, like, it's been about a year since the Iran International Semaphore stories have come out. A lot of people are wondering why about this. And the Washington Free Beacon did a bit of digging through the White House visitor log records. And at least as of August 12th, when this story was published, Tabatabai, not only is she still working for the Department of Defense, she's still visiting the White House at least 8 times, according to the logbook, since those stories were published, the latest one being in April.
So there's a known Iranian spy in the White House.
Yes. And this obviously caused a stir among some of the Republicans in Congress. Senator Tom Cotton and Representative Elise Stefanik pressed Kamala Harris especially about the connections with this. Tabatabai, for her part, she also has connections with Phil Gordon, who's her, or Harris's national security advisor. They co-wrote three opinion pieces back in the day arguing on removing sanctions from Iran. And this may not necessarily be a smoking gun, but at least according to these congressional figures, they they asked Harris to give a testimony or some other evidence just to show exactly what her relationship is with Gordon and where Tabai Tabai fits in with there. Harris stonewalled them. She has refused to answer their request to the point where Senator Cotton sent a letter to her on August 15th, quote, "The presence of such an obvious security risk in your inner circle should have elicited your utmost attention. It raises the question of whether you've been aware of Mr. Gordon's possible links to the Iranian regime and simply find your policies aligned enough with Tehran's interests that ties to that regime don't concern you." End quote. It's not just a few smaller outlets connecting the dots. Even members of Congress are concerned. And again, to this day, that I know of, no official response from the government has happened. I know that Tabai Tabai has had her security clearances reviewed. The results of that or haven't come out. She's obviously still working for the government. This is another one of those things, I think, as you mentioned, we're coming into an election year. The government does not want this to blow up, and the more they dig, the probably going to be a lot more dirt that would make the current Democratic campaign electoral poison. So I think at this point they're stonewalling and they're trying to make as little noise as possible, let as few ripples in the media as possible go through is their only option.
So I think it's very clear. This is not a Robert Malley problem. This is not one guy that Iran happens to have compromised and used that to smuggle a few people into the State Department. This is something that goes much higher than him. This is something that goes right to the top. And it is exactly as you were just reading from that congressman. Iran's goals align with Barack Obama's goals. And so he is opening the doors to the State Department and the Defense Department and these other organizations and allowing in Iranian agents. And it's not necessarily Iran being incredibly skilled at espionage. It is about an American administration empowering Iran.
Indeed. And you mentioned Barack Obama. We talk about the Biden administration. I think it's common knowledge that Biden himself is not running the government. And the fact that he's employed so many former Obama people, the fact that Obama still lives within walking distance of the White House, all these things, all roads eventually lead up to him, which is what we've been saying for a long time. Our sister program, The Trumpet Daily, has been saying for a long time. I think now, though, a lot more people are beginning to realize that, if not necessarily connecting the dots with the man, connecting the dots with everything the man wanted to happen when he was officially president. And again, you look at October 7th right now, you look at what's going on with Hezbollah, you look at many other things that the current presidency has done with Iran, like unfreezing maybe not $100 billion from the get-go, but there have been billions of dollars worth of sanctions relief given to Iran leading up to October 7th. There's still dialogue in one way or another happening with Iran and its proxies. Everything that America's doing is to empower Iran, and you have to ask the question, why? And not just why, but why Iran? Like, even if you had the vision that America is an evil imperialist power and we need to empower global partners to fill the void and to get rid of colonialism, why aren't we seeing the same kind of infiltration, say, with North Korea or with Cuba or some of these other countries? Maybe there is, we don't know. But at least from what we could tell, the main story and the main focus of the government is on Iran. Why Iran? Well, Iran, as you can see with October 7th, as you can see with Hezbollah, has a special designs towards the Jewish state of Israel. You mentioned Israel before and it being tied up with some of these things, and with the prime minister there being one of the few people to speak up about this. We haven't talked about this so much on program, but Israel really gets under Obama's skin. Israel really gets under the deep state's skin. And it's not so much what Israel does as a country right now, but more of what it represents. Especially somebody like Netanyahu, who's taking a conservative direction, who's taking the country to represent more biblical values, embraces biblical history. For somebody like Obama, that who does not like what America represents, that does not like the Judeo-Christian values that underpin American society, the country where those values came from, that wrote the book that those values came from, at least as far as the physical people are concerned, that is the legacy that Obama is trying to go after.
And that is where you need to understand spiritual Bible truth. Yeah, like we had our show on Egypt, or a segment on Egypt, do pretty well on YouTube, and it got out to quite a large number of people that don't often listen to us. And one comment that we got from a few people is, whoa, the Bible kind of came out of nowhere there. Why are we bringing up the Bible in context of Middle Eastern news? And I think this is an excellent story to illustrate the answer to that question. Because like you said, how do you make rational, logical sense of this? And I think unless you understand the spiritual aspect of what is happening here, you can't. And this is what Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flory wrote in his book, America Under Attack. For 8 years, Obama pursued treacherous anti-American, anti-Israel, pro-Iran, pro-Muslim policies. And I think from what we've reviewed today, we've learned more about that than when Barack Obama was in office. And I think we've learned more about that than when Mr. Flory finished that book. Like, we're learning more about this all the time. He lists several things that Barack Obama did. He said, most importantly, he empowered the most extreme elements within the world's number one terrorist nation, Iran. And then he said, a little further down, Mr. Obama's support for the Iranian regime cannot be explained logically. Such a catastrophic policy can only be understood in the context of the satanic deception that blankets this entire world. And he referenced Revelation 12 and verse 9. And I think that is the case. You can only understand this if you understand that there is a God and that he is infinitely more powerful than the devil, but that there is a devil too, and that their spiritual influence is behind everything that happens on earth. That God is ultimately the architect of world events, that he is leading all of world events through in a plan that is in complete harmony with his master plan, outlined in the gospel, of bringing mankind into the God family. And there is an evil spirit world led by a devil that is doing everything that he can to disrupt that plan. And that plan works through Israel in the Middle East and the nations of biblical Israel, the nations that are also descended from Jacob or Israel. Israel in the Middle East being just one tribe, the Jews. There are other tribes, and God is working out a purpose through all of mankind, and he is working in a particular way through these nations of Israel to achieve that. And then you have a Satan, the devil, that hates that, that wants to stop that, that empowers nations like Iran that strike out in hate, and who then tries to get an individual in at the top of the United States, this basically Israelite superpower, and bring them down. And you understand that, and suddenly everything that has been happening here makes sense. And without that, I mean, even you have people like Lee Smith writing at the Tablet. He had an article several years ago. It was an excellent article at exposing how Barack Obama had empowered Iran. And in the last sentence or two, he just throws up his hands and says, but I can't understand why. Even with this kind of warped leftist worldview, what he's doing just makes no sense. And the Bible answers that question.
Indeed. Our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Flory, has linked Barack Obama and everything he's doing to Israel with Iran, but also the fundamental transformation of America in general to a particular passage in the second book of Kings, chapter 14. There references a king named Jeroboam II. We know from other prophecies, like in Amos 7, that in the end time, including in America, there is to be a leader under, or a prophetic parallel to Jeroboam II leading the country, which is why we know this history is prophetic. And specifically, verses 26 and 27 of 2 Kings 14 is what Mr. Flory zeroes in on. It says, "For the Lord saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter, for there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel. And the Lord said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash." Now, this Jeroboam figure, we expect him to come on the scene and cement his power soon. But as far as Obama is concerned, where he fits into this picture is everything that was described right before Jeroboam enters. The bitter affliction, there's no helper for Israel, that if something didn't change, the name of Israel will be blotted out from under heaven. And this is what Mr. Fleury writes in chapter 2 of his book, The King of the South. It is important to understand the prophetic principle of duality. History is repeating itself today. Just what is the prophetic name of Israel? In our day, the emphasis is on three physical nations of Israel: America, Britain, and the Jewish nation in the Middle East. Iran's mullahs publicly say they want to wipe Israel off the map. That is another way of saying they want to blot out the name of Israel from under heaven. Why in the world would an American president align with these murderers, and why implement a deal that virtually guarantees Iran becoming a nuclear power? The prophetic passage in 2 Kings 14 explains. President Obama shares the goal to blot out the name of Israel. The Iranians may not know that the Americans are literal descendants of ancient Israel, but they do label America the Great Satan and the Jewish state the Little Satan. They really want to blot these nations out. And through his nuclear deal, Barack Obama was helping them accomplish this goal, end quote. Everything we just talked about, and Iran getting empowered even after Obama is out of office, so much of it revolves even around that nuclear deal, around the same people, as you said, that made that nuclear deal. Why that nuclear deal? What's so special about it? Well, what happens if Iran gets a nuclear bomb, which, if analysts are correct, can be as little time as a week if Iran wanted to and put together all the parts they had? When you hear them talking about wiping Israel off the map, when you see what Hamas did on October 7th, when you see the kind of potential Hezbollah is threatening to unleash on Israel, you get a very clear picture on what that a nuclear Iran looks like. You get a very clear picture on what blotting out the name of Israel looks like. And again, if you're the president of the United States, probably the most well-informed person in the world with what's going on in the world, there's no way you're ignorant of any of these developments. And the only way you'd be letting these things happen, if not outright aiding and abetting them, is because you share the same goal.
This story does really expose that so clearly, that Barack Obama has been helping Iran in their goal of blotting out Israel in the Middle East, and really they share the same goal of bringing down the United States. That's the clear takeaway from what we've discussed today. So thank you so much for helping make that clear, Mihailo, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to Trumpet World. Now, this is a show all about Bible prophecy. Most churches in the world don't really talk about that at all. But the Bible is full of it. About a third of the Bible is prophecy. Jesus Christ himself, while he was on the earth, talked a lot about Bible prophecy. Matthew 24 is a red letter chapter. It's the words of Christ himself, and it's full of prophecy. Let's start a bit of a short Bible study today by turning to Revelation 12 and verse 17. This passage here reveals some critical truth about identifying God's true church on this earth. Revelation 12 and verse 17 says, "And the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ." So this identifies God's church. God's church keeps the commandments of God. It keeps God's law. It doesn't preach that that law is done away with. But it also has the testimony of Jesus. Now, this sounds just like something everyone would expect God's church to have, and I think you would see most churches out there today would claim, well, we have the testimony of Jesus. But what exactly is the testimony of Jesus? And let's not put in our own ideas, but let the Bible interpret itself. And we can go over to Revelation chapter 19, which reveals the answer here. Revelation 19 and verse 10 says, "And I fell at his feet to worship him, and he said unto me, See you do it not. I am your fellow servant and of your brethren that have the testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy." The testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. Here's what Mr. Gerald Fleury wrote in his book, Unveiled at Last, the Royal Book of Revelation. If we don't understand prophecy, we don't have the testimony of Jesus, which is the spirit of prophecy. You can find where Jesus Christ is by finding the only group of people on earth who understand Bible prophecy. You can't separate the two. Where you find one, you will find the other. Now, there's a lot of sincere churches and a lot of sincere people out there, but your Bible says if they don't understand prophecy, if they're not talking about Bible prophecy, they're not God's church. But why don't all of these churches understand Bible prophecy? I want to give you just one important reason today, and there may be more. But this one reason explains why so many of these groups don't understand Bible prophecy, and it also shows us what we need to do to understand Bible prophecy. And Revelation is a key book of Bible prophecy, and it's a mystery to so much of the world. They fail to understand it, and that failure starts with the very first book of Revelation. Revelation 1 and verse 1 says, "The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to show unto his servants, which must shortly come to pass, and he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John." Very first words of this book, "The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him." In my Bible, if I just look up the page at the title heading, it says, "The revelation of St. John the Divine." And that's contradicted by the very first verse of the book. The people that put that title there don't understand this book. This isn't the revelation of John. It's the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him. The testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. But who is the source of prophecy? Well, this book comes not from ultimately Jesus Christ, but from God the Father. There's a lot to think about there. Matthew 24, verse 36 states that only God the Father knows when Jesus Christ will return, that Christ himself doesn't know that. In his book, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, Mr. Flowey wrote, "Meditate deeply on this first verse. God wants to make sure that as we go through these prophecies, we honor the Father." There is a lot to think about here from this first verse. This is the only way we can understand Bible prophecy. It starts with Revelation 1 and verse 1. We have to understand where it is coming from. And think of the value that that puts on Bible prophecy. God the Father and Jesus Christ have been in perfect harmony for all eternity. Jesus Christ has been in the bosom of the Father. They've had this close, intimate relationship. Yet despite that, God didn't have Jesus Christ author the book of Revelation. He did it himself, or he gave the truth to Jesus Christ to give to John. There is something about this book of prophecy that only God the Father could give us. It is his perspective. Why? Well, isn't the book of Revelation all about beasts and armies and fantastical visions? Well, there are beasts and armies and there are dramatic visions in there. But ultimately, all Bible prophecy is about the family of God. It's about how practically God is building his family and working with mankind to give people the opportunity to become sons of God. And it shows us how world events fits in with that. In that same book, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, Mr. Flowey talks about how we need to understand how all Bible prophecy fits in to the God family context. And so when God gives the book of Revelation, well, that comes right from God the Father. So to understand Bible prophecy, we must honor the Father that reveals it. And think about what that means. There's a lot of implications to that. Again, in this book, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, Mr. Flowey wrote, "If we don't honor the Father, we don't even understand the gospel, which is the good news of the coming family of God, of which the Father is the head." And we have to understand the truth about God and the God family plan. That's why I think before too long, I'll do a segment on what the Bible teaches about the Trinity. This is a Bible prophecy program, but that's something we have to understand. The gospel, the God family vision to understand prophecy. And we need to build our own personal relationship with God the Father if we're going to understand this. Mr. Flowey referenced Malachi 1 and verse 6 in this context in that book, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, which says, "A son honors his father and a servant his master. If then I be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear? Says the Eternal of Hosts unto you, O priests that despise my name, and you say, wherein have we despised your name?" This is in Malachi 1 and verse 6. It's talking about God's own people that do not honor the Father, that stopped honoring the Father or never honored him. Verse 7 says, "You offer polluted bread upon my altar. You say, wherein have we polluted you? And that you say the table of the eternal is contemptible." This polluted bread or spiritual food, polluted spiritual food is being offered up. Verse 8 talks about corrupt sacrifices. You offer the blind for sacrifices. Is it not evil? You offer the lame and sick. Is it not evil? And these people look religious. They're giving sacrifices, but they're polluted. They're compromised. And God says, well, if you're giving polluted sacrifices, you're not honoring the Father. We need to be giving God the Father our best, the best in the time that we sacrifice for him, the focus time that we need for Bible study, our best focus time in prayer. Our whole lives are living sacrifices. Romans 12 and verse 1 tells us that. And we need to make sure that that sacrifice, that living sacrifice that we lay down for the Father is not polluted. And when we pray to God the Father. Do we honor him in our prayer? Are we focused? Are we concentrating? Do we go to him for the power to live the rest of our lives as pure spiritual sacrifices? Or are we offering up blind and lame sacrifices? God says that he is a father and we must honor him. This is a way that we can honor him in our personal relationship with him. And if we don't do that, if we're not praying intently, if we're not giving God our best, if we're not striving to make our lives this pure living sacrifice, if we're not working to improve our lives, I mean, none of us are anywhere close to having perfect lives, to being the perfect sacrifices that Jesus Christ was, this perfect sacrifice. But are we working to move closer to that? Are we working to obey God better, to practically put into practice what we're hearing? This is what we need to be doing to understand Bible prophecy. This is what we need to be doing to honor the Father. We'll look at Matthew 11 just as a final scripture here. Matthew 11 and verse 25 says, "At that time, Jesus answered and said, 'I thank you, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hid these things from the wise and the prudent and have revealed them unto babes.'" I notice once again, it is the Father that hides and reveals. That's who Jesus Christ is talking to here. And the verse before puts this in context, even of talking about the day of judgment, of understanding about Bible prophecy and God's plan. And that understanding comes from the Father. He will hide it and he will reveal it. And he reveals it only to those who are humble and childlike, to submit to the way that God is working, who honor him. So many of these world's churches stop at Jesus Christ. Herbert W. Armstrong wrote, "We cannot approach the Father by our own merits. We have none. Christ is the door, the way. One does not go to a door and stop. He goes on through the door. Christ gives us access to God, and he intercedes with God for us." We need to understand the role that God the Father plays in the gospel, in his plan. We need to be honoring the Father in our lives. We need to be submitting to God's government and understanding the way that he leads his church. All of this is about understanding the source of Bible prophecy, which we have to do to be able to understand it. Only if we do this and have this humble, childlike attitude that Jesus Christ talked about here, will God the Father open our minds to really understand what he is saying in Bible prophecy. And when he does, that just opens up such an incredibly positive vision. It helps us tie in all of these events, some of which in the book of Revelation can be kind of terrifying. But it opens all of that up in context of the gospel, in context of the God family plan, and helps us really see that behind so many of these discouraging appearing events in the world, God is working out an incredible, wonderful purpose. You can read more about this subject of honoring the Father in our free little booklet, God is a Family. That will take you through God the Father's role that he plays in the God family plan. And again, that's not a separate subject to Bible prophecy. That is something essential to understand what God really wants to communicate to us with Bible prophecy. We also mentioned America Under Attack in the first half and King of the South. Both of those books really expose the way that Barack Obama has worked to bring down the United States and empower Iran, and the spiritual warfare, the spiritual agenda behind that. All of those books you can get on our website, thetrumpet.com. We would be more than happy to send them to you wherever you are, or you can read them online. That is about it for another episode of Trumpet World. Thank you so much for joining us. You can get in touch with us at trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. We'd be very happy to hear from you. You can comment, you can like, you can subscribe, you can share the show. We're very happy to get that out there. Thank you to George Haddad for engineering and production, for Mihailo Zekid for coming in on the show earlier. We'll be back with our regular Week in Review program on Friday. And until then, keep watching your world.